It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Does meat have to come from animals? Well, there's meat now that is plant-based and it's come from plants. Not everyone agrees that they should be calling it meat, but it is, and it's showing up in many restaurants across the country. But something else is on the horizon, and it's meat that would actually kind of come from animals, from cells from animals, and produced what will be called cultivated meat. Now, this is a whole new frontier, if you will, and I'm happy to have a couple of people with me today that can explain it very well. An old friend of mine, Al Banish with Matson, he's the Executive Vice President of New Product Strategy and Insights, and also Carrie Shada. And Carrie is the Senior Consumer Research Scientist at the Good Food Institute, and I'm really happy to have them on Farm to Table Talk. Because this is an interesting issue, and I want to start off with Carrie. Explain, what are you doing in this area that's leading us to cultivated meat?
So Matson and GFI work together with Memphis Meat, serving as a technical advisor, to really work to answer this question. How do we describe and help consumers understand what cultivated meat is? And so we found that describing it as cultivation was something that was familiar to consumers and that they could understand. So cultivated meat is just another way of producing meat. The end product is identical at the cellular level to meat produced in a conventional manner. But it's similar to the way that we grow plants by being able to start with a small cutting from a plant. We can put it in a nutrient-rich environment, like a greenhouse, and allow it to grow. And we can do the same things with animal cells and bypass the need for, you know, growing meat within an animal. We can place those cells in a nutrient-rich environment, a cultivator, and allow it to give it warmth and nutrients and allow it to grow. Both ways, again, we have that same end product of meat that we're familiar with. So it's very distinct from plant-based meat and that it is, you know, identical at the cellular level to animal-based meat, but it is also different from conventional meat in that you bypass the animal.
It's just not meat grown
directly from cells.
I know. It's not an easy thing to grasp. Now, so you actually are... Again, you still haven't a real live animal. So this is beginning with actual, like if it's beef. So it's starting with beef cells. So as you were making the explanation that it's like taking a cutting from a plant. So you would actually take a small amount of, say, from a sirloin steak almost, that you pull some cells and put them into something that makes it, that goes from cell level to what, the size of a whole cut? A typical steak size serving?
So you can obtain the cells from the animal itself, and so then there's multiple ways to get those cells, but there's lots of work to create cell line repositories too. So we should have many different kinds of, you know, animal cells available to us in terms of species. And ones that grow really well in cultivators. At this point, yes, there needs to be, you know, that original animal to get cells from, but they should be able to, you know, puke from just a small amount of cells.
So if we go from the farm to the table, and on the table itself, you would have perhaps a steak or a hamburger, you know, is one thing that people could easily think of. And that the end product could actually physically look like a regular steak?
In the future, yes. And there's been some great new companies that are working on making steaks as well. Others are more looking like, ground beef. Because a cultivator, you know, one of the things that you need to do after growing the cells is to have them grow in a certain structure that might recreate state. So the technology is rapidly growing, where, you know, you see companies doing that now, where we're able to create the structure that's more more like steak as it grows. Yeah.
So if
so
you were
going, you know, components like fats in it and so on too.
So you would be choosing almost like a donor, say for example, an Angus breed, and then you would possibly choose a cell that would you make a choice of where the cells would come from based on their end use? Like you're more likely to take cells from what would be a loin for something that, for versus hindquarter or something like that. So they have to, can it actually be muscle cells that they're using to be able to cultivate the meat?
Yeah, so there's definitely, you know, muscle cells that are used. We also, you know, fat is part of it, connective yep. tissue. So that will be come, you know, as technology improves, it'll be really important to see, like, how we can really, create that that same meat experience that you would see with marbling and so on. But no, my understanding is not that it's just like a direct thing, like we take a cell from a loin and then grow a loin. But, you know, we can create the structure that would create the same experience.
I'm trying to figure out how to not mix my metaphors here and say I'm getting in the weeds, but I am kind of getting into the weeds a little bit because I think this is the hard part for people. They kind of get the basic idea. I'm getting the basic idea. So when they take cells and they put it into what kind of material helps grow the cells so they multiply and you get a quantity from them. I don't know what you start with, you know, like a cell versus a teaspoonful of cells or something that ends up with 100 pounds of meat. Is there any way you can give us some sense of this process, of what it would look like if we were going to stand around in the laboratory and see this process take place?
Yes, I think your question is a good one, and something that a lot of people have would like more information about. In some ways, it's hard to give those specifics because everything is under research and development. So what you know is being researched now might not be the exact process that's used once cultivated meat is on market. So I think you know what. Your desire to know the specifics, it makes sense. We just don't know all specifics about what will work at scale. That's something that's being worked out now is to get the products at scale.
Adding to Carrie's point there, Roger, there are dozens of companies who are, you know, who are working on this. And, you know, each of their approaches is going to be slightly different, somewhat different, and there's a lot of intellectual property involved. So I think that, you know, one of the things that's exciting is that the companies are approaching the same basic idea from different angles. And, you know, the exact process, the exact timing, the exact meat that comes from that process. And by the way, it applies not only to beef and pork and meat, but also to seafood. Those are all going to be a little bit different. But I think that the one thing that's common is, as Carrie described, the analogy to plant propagation, where you take a cell from an animal and put it in a fertile environment and enable it to grow.
There's something that you put this into that allows it to grow, and at some point, you know, hamburgers or whatever.
Right. So it's the focus of our work, you know, it hasn't been so much to demonstrate the science on how this works. The science is happening. This is going to happen. And as Carrie said, I think before long, we will actually see that meat that emerges from this process. The work we had done together was really more on how to make it a little bit more approachable, and obviously that's what we're talking about today. What do we call this? Because the industry had used the industry and the press had used names ranging from cell-based to lab-grown to clean to slaughter-free to cultured. And one of the things we did believe early on was that it would be important to align around common nomenclature. And that was really the focus of the work.
And when you say the focus of the work, then I assume you're having like focus groups, that you've taken consumers and you've described the product and you've gotten their reactions to it. And that's and then other studies and surveys that you've reached maybe thousands of people across the country and had them react to what you're proposing, and Cultivated came out on top.
Carrie led the research work, so why don't you take that?
This is a science communication project. So we started out with criteria that we really wanted to focus on. So one of the things was transparency. We've talked a little bit about that today in the podcast so far, about just being clear with consumers and to help them make informed decisions. We found that the meat cultivation concept really helped with that. To your point earlier, Roger, as you know, the technology advances, along the way, there will be, you know, transparency to consumers about how production happens specifically. But we wanted to have describe this new way of producing meat in a way that's familiar, is transparent to them, that helps them understand how it's both similar to and different from other types of meat, and that would, you know, to help them understand what the product is itself. It's descriptive, and that, of course, is, you know, familiar and promotes acceptability. So yes, we did several focus groups, and we did several rounds of consumer surveys, and that was all combined with rounds of ideation as well. So Mapton and GSI and Memphis as well worked together to ideate what is the best way to describe this new type of meat to consumers.
What would consumers see the advantage would be for these cultivated meat versus plant-based meat?
That was not part of our project here, but to answer that question, we see that the three types of, you know, looking at conventional meat, plant-based meat, and cultivated meat together make up a market that consumers are desiring. So we see a lot of overlap in terms of people wanting all three types of meat, among a consumer base, and that there's some differentiating, that some consumers want only plant-based, some only want cultivated, some only want conventional meat. To the original question you asked about, I think, the, you know, nomenclature for cultivated meat, we ultimately selected that because it met all those criteria that I was speaking of. So it was descriptive for consumers. They found it appealing. They found it a familiar. It helped them really to understand what it was, what the product, new production process was, and then also helped them to know that it's not plant-based meat, you know, and know that it's not conventional meat.
As I hear this conversation that we're having, I'm kind of thinking that people that have issues with livestock production because of their concerns that they may be contributing excessively to global warming. There are some people that don't like the idea of eating animals because an animal ends up dying. The biggest difference I see for that, if people are looking for the taste and flavor of the cultivated meat, if it's the same and closer to the same as the other beef, so many fewer animals are involved. So potentially, if you start using cells to produce all these hamburgers and whatever else that would be coming from it, you only need a couple of cattle. You know, you're not going to need feedlots full of thousands and thousands of head of cattle if you're able to produce that product from cells. And so whatever the environmental questions people have, or also the concerns that people have that they feel that the environment the cattle might be raised in is cruel or unusual, or confinement that doesn't seem right, and like say pollution issues that might come up, that's hugely reduced if this technology is successful. Is that a fair assumption?
I would say that is a fair assumption, yes, and why we work to accelerate this this new industry. So there's so many different issue areas that producing meat in new ways can address. So you mentioned, you know, the environmental issues for sure, the animal welfare issues. It's also a global, you know, food security issue, public health in terms of, you know, preserving our antibiotic resources. I think it's compelling on a number of
things. And you bring up antibiotic ball, but there is concern about antibiotic resistance. So I would assume that you have to be very careful about the source for the original cells, that, you know, they didn't happen to be, you know, animals that are, have had antibiotics, for example. And there probably are some other issues, too. And I would just assume that that's going to be part of the process.
I don't know if that's the case, but it kind of comes back to just that, every, you know, that this whole process is under research and development. So, so you know, there's many companies in the space that are kind of working on perfecting the right way to go about doing this. But of course, you know, so many of the people working in this area care about these issues, and, you know, that's driving their motivation to create a new way of producing meat. So, you know, the antibiotic resistance issue is a key one for many people.
Well, it's very, very interesting. So, again, I get back to this idea that if you're producing products that would be what they're used to having, pork or beef or so forth, and it's done from a cellular level, there's not as much need eventually for as many ranches, perhaps, or as many feedlots and whatever issues that we're concerned with that are around that. It seems like it's one of the biggest payoffs to this, is it'd be as if we could produce all the cars we need in America with one factory instead of hundreds of factories, you know, that the carbon footprint and all the other issues are reduced if you're able to do this. Do you fear there could be a reaction, as there has been, to GMO, whereas now you can go to the store and see non-GMO labels? Are you worried that there could be a pushback about this technology from consumers that are just suspicious?
Well, I think that was the crux of the assignment, Roger. We, you know, and GMO is a good example of nomenclature that in and of itself sounds scary. Genetically modified, okay, that doesn't sound like something I'd want to eat. And we feel the same way. We felt the same way about a name like lab-grown or cell-based. It's not approachable. It doesn't sound yummy. It doesn't sound like something you'd want to eat. So as Kerry said before, we really wanted to come up with a way to describe this product that was understandable, that was neutral. And, you know, I'll point out that the goal of this, while cultivated meat will use a fraction of the natural resource and so forth, the goal isn't to put, you know, traditional meat production out of business at all. It is simply to provide choice and also recognize that there's a limit to what, you know, to how many people can be fed by traditional farming and ranching. Mm-hmm. So, one of the main concerns was how will consumers respond to this, and how do we make it something that they'll want to choose? And that was, again, that's why we started the work, because we were pretty sure that if the idea of this product conjures up a laboratory and a petri dish, that's not going to be all that appealing, and that's sort of the GMO analogy. What we wanted was a term more like organic, which is one that the industry embraced and is very approachable to consumers.
Well, you could have organic, couldn't you? Could probably be organic cultivated meat?
I don't know.
If the animals were fed organic feed that were the original source of the cells, that's a frontier. It's just one of those many frontiers, I suppose, that are ahead of you. So how far away is the industry consensus before there's some of these products available to the average consumer? When will we see the product?
Gotcha. That's, I think everyone wants to know that question, right? And everyone wants to know, I would love to know the answer to that too. So there's, the research is there, the development is there that, you know, we can produce these products. Many people have enjoyed eating them, you know, they taste good, but they're not, we don't have, two major things. Yeah, we don't have the scale to produce it in large quantities, and we don't have the regulatory environment yet either. So, those are the two main things that we're waiting on. That will once those hurdles are passed, that we'll be able to see cultivated meat in the marketplace. But those, the USDA and FDA are working together right now to pass regulations so that that this can become on the market. So we expect quite soon. It's just a question of scale, right? So we'll probably see it available in small quantities at first, and then gradually, start seeing it more and more in the marketplace.
In the press, Roger, if you do some homework on that, you'll see that at least one of the players has talked about launching products within the next 12 months. So whether that they're that close and whether the other players are close behind or not, I don't know. But we're not talking about something that's a decade away. We're talking about months, it seems.
Yeah, I've seen some of those, and I was guessing that when you were talking about some of the rules and regulations that are still ahead, I was just in my own mind, I was thinking, well, it's a couple of years, but perhaps sooner. I'm sure people are curious. Now, the final thing I want to mention, if you're able to produce meat without having to raise an animal to 1,000 pounds over 2 years' time and so forth, it would seem like it'd be a lot less expensive. And I know that's probably a tricky thing, Ann, because whenever you get started with a product, they're going to want to make it profitable, obviously. But generally stated, should these products be less expensive than conventionally grown meat?
Yes, you're correct with that. We think longer down in the future, there's a whole lot more efficiency with both plant-based and cultivated meat. But of course, we expect the product to be higher priced at first. There's a lot of research and development, as I mentioned, that's going into it. But as those, as we have more efficiencies for developing scale, there's no reason to expect it would not be able to be lower in price.
Well, it's a really, really interesting area, and it's one that could offer huge change to the ranching and feedlots and to packing plants eventually, and consumers too, for a lot of different reasons. What would you two recommend for consumers that want to follow what's developing here and to better understand? Maybe they need a diagram to go with our talk this morning, which we covered a lot of different areas. Is there some place that they can go online right now and get more information to back up what we've been talking about?
The purpose of our project was to develop those communication tools to help consumers understand them. So we do have those resources available for companies to share with consumers and for our organization too. I'll just pull up the website, make sure I have the right exact one for meat cultivation.
Should they go to your website?
Yeah, so we have GFI.org for just learning more about alternative proteins. Specific to the meat cultivation project that we've been talking about, we also have GFI.org/cultivate-meat, and that provides those communication tools that we've been talking about. So we have a narrative that explains the process, this new way of producing meat, why we do it, why we're diversifying the protein supply to meet this growing population needs. And we also have a graphic, too, that explains meat cultivation. And so we intend to keep developing these, turning them into things like infographics where people that do have those more specific questions can really dive down deeper. But that's where I'd recommend starting.
And at GFI.org, Roger, there are a number of really good short stories or even videos. I'm looking at one right now just from last week with the title, How Do Marble Cultivated Beef? Which is essentially the one of the questions you asked earlier. So there's a lot of good information at TFI.org.
And I guess one other little thing I just thought of, and that is that I assume when we're talking about meat, you think about beef oftentimes. But I think, as you said, Al, it applies to beef, pork, I suppose veal, dairy, let's see, even I suppose you could go to rabbits and lambs and goats and probably almost any animal meat, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. So, and there's been all sorts of testing about what kinds of meat we can produce. But from a consumer standpoint, what we've found is that consumers really want that familiarity. So when you do cross-country studies and, they want the same type of meat that they largely consume within their culture. So we expect it to be not too obscure in terms of type of meat produced, but the traditional things that you would expect that are commonly eaten in different markets. So that's beef, poultry, pork, fish, and seafood, and all of the same, proteins that we enjoy eating today.
Well, we're going to have to do this again, because I'm sure as this develops, there's going to be more and more to talk about. And I really appreciate having Al Banish with Mattson and also Dr. Carrie Shada with the Good Food Institute on Farm to Table Talk. Thank you both.
You are welcome.
Thank you so much, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.